Good morning. Welcome into In Focus on News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples. And for the next hour, we're going to be joined by Cheryl Collins. She's the director at the Riley County Historical Museum. Joins us here via Zoom this morning. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
It is a pleasure to have you on here. And I don't know if we've done a Zoom with you here yet, but it's nice to be able to see your face again. We miss having you guys here at the studio.
I miss being able to come in. Maybe we'll get back to that pretty soon.
Yeah, let's hope so. We sure hope so. This can be a fun topic here today. We're going to talk kind of this history of street names, and which I always find to be a fascinating thing. I love learning more about my community. Real quick, though, just want to make sure we let people know, since it is kind of an inclement weather day, the status of the historical museum. Are you guys open or closed today?
We're closed on Mondays always. Oh, okay. So we aren't open to the public on Mondays. But I'm assuming that we'll be open regular hours Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday and Sunday, 2 to 5, the rest of the week.
Okay, very good. Well, yeah, it worked out that it just happened to be a day that you don't work anyway, so that's good. But yeah, so our topic today is going to be Manhattan, Kansas street names, which I always like to tell my my oldest daughter, who's 10 years old. It's kind of neat when you think about, you see the streets you drive on every day, you don't think too much about it, but they got their name somehow, and a lot of it has to do with the history of the community.
Right, it does. And it's very interesting to see how those threads go back to the very earliest time in our community. In doing research on this, one of the main things I used was a pamphlet put out by the Riley County Genealogical Society, written by the late Connie Cavaney. And she went through a lot of the Manhattan names and tried to determine exactly where they came from. So that's been a really useful resource through the years.
And I just kind of skimmed through, haven't read the whole thing, but it has a pretty extensive list here of every street here in the city, just about.
Quite a lot of them.
Not necessarily the numbered streets here, but anything that's named. I mean, you just taking a glance here, even the big streets, even some of the smaller streets here in the neighborhoods, like Dix Drive. If you ever wondered how that got its name here, Harvey Dix, landowner, he owned the Harvey Chicken Farm. It was constructed on Dix property, so did not know that.
Right, the things you drive by every day, you can find a little bit about them with this pamphlet.
And you've selected a few street names here, just kind of in particular here, that you're going to highlight.
Yeah. Of course, Connie, in order to get the pamphlet in a reasonable length, was concise in her description. So I thought I'd go a little more in depth than some of the names. And one of them I picked out was Casement Road, of course, because that's where you live. Mm. And it was named for Dan Dillon Casement and his wife, and Dan's wife, Olivia Thornburg Casement. So Dan Dillon Casement was born in 1868 to General John S. Casement, who was a railroad builder and a Civil War general. Actually, his grandfather on his mother's side, his wife's dad was also a Civil War general. So Dan Dillon Casement's mother was a suffragist and worked for the women's right to vote. Dan's dad, Jack Casement, and Jack's brother, Dan, built the Transcontinental Railroad, as well as other railroads. Jack Casement invested in a ranch in Kansas called Juniata, and that was in the area of Casement Road. And so that's how Casement got connected there. Dan Casement was a well-known Hereford and quarter horse breeder, and he was one of the founders of the American Quarter Horse Association. He was born in New York, but grew up in Painesville, Ohio. He attended Princeton and Columbia universities. Dan's father gave him the Juniata Ranch on his 21st birthday in 1889. Dan also owned a ranch in Colorado and spent some time building a railroad in Costa Rica. By 1915, he lived mostly full-time in Manhattan. Though he was almost 50 years old, he served in World War I. Dan Casement was active in politics and opposed Roosevelt's New Deal of the 1930s. He died March 7th, 1953, and he's buried in Painesville, Ohio. So Dan Casement was a really colorful character. I'd love to hear from folks that have met him in person. My understanding is that he could curse a blue streak, and he was an unconventional conversationalist. On more than one formal occasion, he wore a bright-colored vest. K-State President Farrell described him as scholar, stockman, poet, sportsman, philosopher, statesman, individualist, altruist, and patriot. He's in the Hall of Great Westerners and the Cowboy Hall of Fame, and both those honors came in 1958. So Casement was really a bigger-than-life character, I think, here, and I would have loved to have met him. Yeah. I have a long list of folks that I meet at work that I wish I would have met.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, what a and what a bunch of accolades. I mean, that's pretty cool. And, you know, in going and doing some of the research, has Casement always been, the road has always been kind of the same, I guess, shape that it is now here, or has it been different?
I don't know. And I don't know, maybe some of your listeners have an idea about that. I really don't know. Of course, you know, that whole area changed with Tuttle Creek Reservoir being built and the river changing a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I'm just not sure about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I wondered if maybe damming the river changed kind of the trajectory of where Casement Road sits now to where it was before. Interesting. What was, do we know the name of the road before it got named, or was it just kind of part of one of the early roads that came into town?
I don't know. I think Riley County's done a really good job of sticking with traditional names. And in fact, I'm on a roads committee for Riley County. One of the things that Riley County has worked really hard to do is to try to avoid duplicate names. Because obviously with emergency services, you don't want any confusion when you call the ambulance or the fire truck on where you are. So they've worked to try to make sure that they don't duplicate in Riley County and don't duplicate even with contiguous counties, because that can cause real problems. They've also tried to figure out some rational ways of naming streets and numbering and so on, so that it makes it more rational for emergency services, which I think is really a really good idea. But sometimes they need names for streets. And so one of my roles is to come up with potential names. And so what I do usually is research the history of the area and then come up with some potential names. A lot of my names get shot down because they're too duplicative or could be heard wrong by a dispatcher. And so those names are rejected immediately. But then the leftover names are all on a long list that potentially could be used that continue to give us that local character and unique sense of place. So, I think names are important in that regard to give you that local connection. And I think it's really good that Riley County tries to first stick with traditional names if possible, and then looks to local connected names for suggestion if that's not possible or they need a different name, a new name. So, I think we have some great names here in Riley County. Another one I picked out to talk about was Kimball Avenue. And Kimball Avenue was named for John Melville Kimball. And he was a landowner in the area of Kimball Avenue. And this is Kimball, K-I-M-B-A-L-L, because we also have the K-I-M-B-L-E's. And see, the B-A-L-L's are the Kimball Avenue Kimballs, and the BLEs or the Castle Kimballs. So you have to keep track your Kimballs in Manhattan and Raleigh County. So John Melville Kimball was one of at least nine children of John Sr. In the winter of 1856, John Melville, who was 19 years old, and his brother Augustus, who was 21, came to Manhattan with the New England Immigrant Aid Society. And of course, they were free staters and coming to vote in that struggle to make Kansas a free state. Within a year, though, Augustus was killed in an accident. John M.'s brother Richard and his father John also then came to Kansas, and eventually some of their sisters and their families also moved to the Manhattan area. The Kimball family were major supporters of the Bluemont Central College. John Kimball Sr. donated a large sum of money to help build the first college building at the corner of College and Claflin. And so that's where Central National Bank is today, where that building was. During the Civil War, three Kimball sons, including John Melville, served in the Civil War. And then in 1894-5, John Melville served as Riley County Treasurer. His home, John Melville Kimball's home, which was built in 1860, is still standing today at 3017 Mary Kendall Court in Manhattan. And he died, John Melville Kimball died in 1922. John Melville and his wife, Ellen Barney Kimball, had six children. And one of their sons was Charles Augustus, or Gus Kimball. And Gus was a newspaper editor. And his wife was Mattie Toothaker Kimball. Now, Mattie Kimball was one of the leaders of the women's suffrage movement in Manhattan and in Riley County and in Kansas, in fact. And I wanted to mention that right now, the Riley County Historical Society and Museum has an exhibit at the Manhattan Town Center at the East Court, and it's a traveling exhibit from Freedom's Frontier National Heritage Area called Demanding a Greater Future, Celebrating the Centennial of Women's Suffrage. And we've added some local Riley County women's suffrage information, including a mention of Mattie Toothaker Kimball. And so that exhibit will be at the Manhattan Town Center through February 6th. So I hope folks will go by and take a look at it.
All right.
And there's a couple of other great exhibits right now at the Manhattan Town Center. The Flint Hills Discovery Center has a terrific exhibit on Manhattan microbes, which discusses polio and influenza. And we actually have some objects in that exhibit. And then right there beside where the Manhattan Microbes exhibit is, the Fort Riley Museums has an exhibit area. So folks can go by the Manhattan Town Center and keep themselves distanced and have some fun looking at some exhibits, at least through February 6th.
Okay, good to know. We have a caller here with a comment, I believe, or a question. Let's get to them next. Good morning, you're on In Focus.
Hey, just give me a moment. I'm on my speakerphone.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine.
All right. So, one thing I learned studying some of the early maps of Manhattan is that some of the original street layouts were Wyandotte tribe reservations. The Wyandotte tribe came to the Kansas Territory and settled Wyandotte County and organized it, but they were given at least 20 reservations across the territory. And three of them were in Riley County. And the Casement Ranch was at an angle, basically a square, but at an angle. And later that was picked up by the Casement family. But downtown Manhattan was originally laid out by the Wyandotte tribe as one of their reservations.
Interesting.
That is correct. Those Wyandotte Indians were given floats, they called them, and that was title to a certain amount of land, and those floats they could sell. And so two Wyandotte Indians sold two floats, and that was what was used to get clear title, or to try to get clear title, I'll put it that way, to the original plat of Manhattan. And one of the floats covered south of Points, one of them covered north of Points. Through the years, there was a legal controversy about whether the float that covered south of Points had been legally sold. So it clouded the title to all the land south of Points. So through a number of legal agreements and so on, a group of businessmen got together and bought the title to clear that up. And then my understanding is property owner South of Points then paid back that consortium the money that they had spent so that they would continue to have a clear title. Professor Homer Sokolowski wrote a great article about all of that land changing and how that worked out in the Kansas State Historical Society quarterly magazine. And my understanding is that is available. That article is available on the Kansas State Historical Society website now. And if you go out to kshs.org and search, I think you would find that. It really is a fascinating story in how land titles work out. And if you read the early Manhattan or Boston town site minutes, it's a wonder anybody has a clear title, because they would give lots to somebody and then a few pages later they'd say, oh, give someone else that land, and then realize they'd already given it away and it was a mess.
Wow. That's fascinating. Well, we got to take a break. We'll have some more discussion here on some street names in the city of Manhattan when we return. News Radio KMAN.